You are listening to the Massive Report podcast.
Good evening and welcome to the Massive Report, brought to you by 180 Property Development for their sponsorship of the Massive Report podcast. 180 Property Development is your partner in redeveloping, remodeling, or even building your house from the ground up. Skilled builders and designers are ready to help you build the home of your dreams. Check out 180propertydevelopment.com for your next projects. And I said good evening, not knowing when you are going to listen to the Massive Report. You can listen to it anytime. You can listen to it in the morning. But I should tell you that we're at Hen Docks and we're pleased to be here because I love the atmosphere, and also they have malted grain beverages on tap. And so that checks all of the boxes. As we launch into the Massive Report, we got a lot to talk about tonight. We'll get to that here in a second. Mike, good evening.
Good evening, sir. It's nice to be back.
Alex.
How's it going?
Ralph Schudel joins us. Did I get it right?
Yeah, you got it right. You practiced it plenty of times.
I did, but then I was second-guessing myself. Ralph, tell me about yourself.
Oh, gosh. How much time do you have?
Not much.
But 2 seconds.
2 seconds? Okay. writer, photographer, jack of all trades, work many jobs. I'm currently with Ohio Dominican Women's Soccer as well. So, yeah.
What do you do there?
I am the brand. No, that's the Eagles. No, currently I am the brand manager. I help with all their branding and, you know, making stuff look nice and presentable and making the university look wonderful in the public eye in Columbus.
All right, well, my daughter's going to Ohio State, but we have to pay them. So if you'd offer my daughter a full ride, we'll just go down the street, down Sunbury Road.
1216 Sunbury Road.
That's right. So we'll talk afterwards.
Okay.
Maybe you've held a scholarship back there at Ohio Dominican. Well, welcome, and I'm glad to have everybody here to get. First of all, we're going to get to the game here in a little bit later, but because of everything that's been going on and the build-up to this game, I feel like the pregame and the tailgate scene and everything was almost not more important than the game, but I felt like it meant so much to everyone to have the full game day experience. And before you tell me your thoughts on perhaps what was different in the stadium, what was better, just take me through, Mike, if you would, and we'll go around the room here, your game day experience on Saturday. What did you do? Where did you do it?
Well, you know, since I've been away for a while, it's been a few years since I've been to a game. It's been about 3 years since I had been to a game, so being back
wow.
in town. Yeah, I know, right?
That had to feel extra special.
It was. It was really cool, especially because, you know, a year ago I was like, am I ever going to do this again, right? But so I got there really early. I got there around 3 o'clock, pretty much right when the gates opened, I think, and just took a stroll around the stadium again just to kind of see it. Because it had been a while, and I had seen pictures over the last year or two, and it wasn't quite, it was kind of in, it needed repairs, right, as we all noticed. But it looked great. It looked awesome. There was a buzz in the stadium. There was a feel there. And it was just fun to be able to see everybody again. And I love seeing the soccer field. Kids were playing on it, which is awesome, which I know was hadn't been the thing in recent years, right? And, you know, just to be able to be kind of in a home again, it felt awesome. So, you know, to walk around to kind of, even though it was freezing, to walk around, it made you feel warm in the soul, right? So it was a beautiful thing.
Right on. Well, that's the thing I didn't think of, that you'd been away for a few years.
Yeah.
So it's almost like going back to your old school or
100%.
Something. 100%. Had to have kind of that weird feeling.
Absolutely. It was like walking through the old neighborhood again. But, you know, there were changes, but they were good changes.
Yeah.
And it was great. I mean, it really felt comfortable. And, you know, I've probably been, I don't know, it's got to be at least 60, 70 games at the stadium, probably more from when I lived here before. But, you know, to be able to experience it again, it just had that other layer of meaning.
Bigger beer selection, too, I think. overall, you probably noticed
which,
that as
which
well.
Which doesn't hurt.
No, doesn't it doesn't hurt. Hurt at all. Alex, how did you spend your game day?
Oh, man. I also got there early. I think I got there maybe around 1:30, 2 o'clock, and that's about what time I usually go to games. Spent a little bit of time in the tailgate, got to see all my friends, see everybody, got to talk to Frankie a little bit.
Did he have his skateboard?
So I don't think he had the skateboard. To be honest, there were so many people at this tailgate this time. Usually there's space to kind of for him to get that longboard through the crowd.
Right.
there was no way he was going to get that longboard through the crowd. So he might have left it in the office. I think he's got like one in reserve that he keeps there. I don't know that for sure, but you'll see him. Even if you're on the – one thing about Frankie, this is not really related to the game, but if you go to the stadium on a non-game day, like a Wednesday or something, there is a 25% chance that you will see Frankie Hayduk in the parking lot on his longboard just like hanging out. It's happened on more than one occasion. He's just been like, oh, what's up, dude? And you're like, Frankie, like, shouldn't you be like doing something else?
Well, that's his job, though.
Yeah. He is a national treasure. I love that man to death. But I saw the owners walking around talking to people.
Wow.
Which was really refreshing.
Imagine that.
J.W. Johnson, who's with the Browns organization, related to the Haslams. Everybody was just having a good time. And I don't know the last time I've hugged that many people before. It was just it's a feeling that's almost hard to describe, but you know, you think you're going to lose something that means a lot to you and then you don't. And, the relief that I felt being in that parking lot, it was overwhelming, and it was, best tailgate I've ever been to. It was fantastic.
Okay. Well, I'm getting the idea that this was sort of the same atmosphere that when you go to a concert and everyone is just like, oh my God, the band is so awesome. And you're high-fiving people that you don't know, or you're hugging people that you don't know. Was it kind of like that?
Yeah, especially people that I did know. The one thing that was interesting about this game is people that I haven't seen in years came back. And to see them again and be like,
good point.
Like, I have you been? You know, what's going on? Crazy year, huh? You know, stuff like that.
Yeah.
But to be able to talk about the whole situation without, you know, the sword kind of hanging over your head, it meant a lot. So just to kind of put everything behind everybody, see all the smiles, and to just enjoy crew soccer again without this off-the-field drama was really, really refreshing, and it was a great day.
Ralph, did you tuck into any chili or anything? What happened for you?
No, I mean, it was a pretty tame day on my end. You know, Sam and I usually are partaking game day a little bit differently, especially, you know, being members of the media. But did take a stroll around the parking lot, talk to a few fans. Randy Sims, everybody knows him, that gentleman. He's a treasure. Got to talk to him for a little bit. But even, you know, not to jump the gun a little bit, but once I got into the stadium, we're in usually a little bit earlier than the fans generally, but I was on the field and I saw Jimmy Haslam walk out with his grandson, and he had a little bit of a joke with him. He said, you know what this is? And he goes, it's not a football field. Well, he goes, you know, son, it kind of is, but you know, he was having a little fun with him. But I actually caught a really cool kind of endearing moment with Dr. Pete and D kind of walking around the center circle there and just kind of pointing out and checking out things and making sure everything was in working order, which is something we never really saw in the past regime. So that was a cool little kind of small touch a little bit. Also, too, just with the way that they handle things logistically, I'm sure you guys can speak to it from a fan perspective as well, but logistically, things were brilliant. I don't think in the 3 years I've been with Massive Report, I've seen things run so smooth on a game day. There was a little bit of small confusion, but it's the first game. It's a dress rehearsal for everybody. But yeah, I think generally just kind of having that NFL presence and kind of amping up the professionalism really helped out.
Absolutely.
Mike, I kind of cut you off there. What were you going to say?
Oh, no. You know, one of the things that I thought was really cool is that you could just kind of feel it in the city, you know, the buzz. And so me and some friends before the game, we went out to eat. And there were people at the restaurant. They had all their crew stuff, and they weren't even going to the game. They were just excited,
really?
Right? Yeah, they just had their crew stuff on, and I don't even think I went home to change yet to get my crew stuff on. And I said, "Are you going to the game?" They're like, "No, we can't. My son's basketball game's going on or whatever, but we just wanted to represent the team and stuff like that." And I thought that was great. And then on the way there, you know, I'm driving down the road, and we're at a red light, and this car next to us, it was a car full of people definitely going to the game, and they had, you know, crew gear on, so I honked at them, started waving, like, yeah, like thumbs up. It just felt good to be like, hey, this is what we're doing again, you know, so it was great.
So you get into the stadium, and we've talked about improvements that needed to be made with infrastructure and so forth. Anything that you guys noticed that was an improvement? Maybe
yes.
A little thing that normally you wouldn't even occur to you in any other time.
Yes, the metal detectors at the gates was a
nice
game
touch.
Changer.
That's a nice touch.
That needs to become a regular thing. I didn't really even realize how much I hated being wanded and having to wait in a line to have somebody like kind of try to wand you, but not really. And to just have a metal detector made it so much easier and faster. So I used to be one of the people in charge of putting up and taking down all of the banners in Nordeca.
Uh-huh.
And so every game day, I would bring a bag full of stuff back when we could still have bags. And in that bag was a pair of metal wire cutters that we would use to cut the zip ties off. And I would usually tell them ahead of time, but sometimes I would forget. And right. I don't think I ever got caught with those wire cutters one time. And so it was, it had always felt to me like a big hassle for nothing, like some sort of kind of
security theater.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly. And to just be able to walk through the stupid metal detector and they can set it however they set it, you know, if it's going to
set it for a wire cutter,
if it beeps on people, then they can, you know, step aside and then get wanded. But I got into that stadium so much quicker than before. Uh-huh. And, really pleasant and everything. I didn't see a single broken thing in the entire stadium. So good job, Jimmy, D, and Pete. It's awesome.
And it was also just very festive. I mean, all the decor and all the banners and things, it just made it feel like an event. And again, I hadn't been to a home game in a few years, but I remember the last time I went, it just felt run down. And you could tell they mm-hmm. didn't care. Mm-hmm. And this was just so much different, you know. And my girlfriend came into town from Idaho. She had never been to a soccer game before. She thought it was the coolest thing ever. You know, it just seemed like a real event, and she loved it. And it's, you know, that's the kind of stuff we want to see.
The big thing I noticed, like you guys were saying, was the decor. I'm all for the small touches. The bathrooms, Patrick Murphy tweeted a picture of, there was an entrance and an exit, which I'm a stickler on that.
Yeah,
you
yeah,
know?
Yeah.
Because if you're running into somebody who's just come back from, you know, doing gosh knows what in the restroom, you know, you don't want to do that. But the big thing that I really liked was, if you guys looked by the players' tunnel, there were those wraps.
Right.
That kind of hid the metal posts that were there. And that looked god-awful on any video, any package, any promotion that you're doing for the team. The fact that they got those measured, they fit perfectly, and they were just bright and vibrant and new. It just, you know, it's the equivalent of like, okay, there's a mess in your kid's room or something like that, and you sweep it under the carpet or something like that. But it looked nice. It felt nice. And that was just, you know, kind of the icing on the cake, like you guys said. At field level, to see the stands and the wraps and everything, it was very overwhelming. It was very emotional.
Well, it sounds to me like it was the difference in presentation between buying your significant other candy at the convenience store in the morning of Valentine's Day and putting a great deal of thought into your gift.
Right.
And their gift to the city. And this is just the first game.
Yeah.
And believe me, things probably came up they hadn't thought of. And sure, they do have people that have been with the organization kind of go, hey, this is the way we do game day, and this happens here, and this happens here. This is when the guy needs to come out and do the national anthem and so forth. But still, they're going to be learning curve things that everybody needs to know. And for them to already be that much further ahead of the game is a tribute to and a harbinger for great things to come, I think.
Brian, the one thing that I love that you said, too, was the national anthem, and the second you told me that is, if you guys remember last year, they used to do the national anthem inside of the 18 closest to the Nordeca, and they stretched the flag out. I love that small touch of just moving the national anthem back in front of the fans of the center circle there, having the flag presented there in a centralized location. For some reason, it felt right. Mm-hmm. And it was nice to have that there. It just felt kind of amateur the way that the past regime used to do it in the 18 there, closest to the Nordeca.
All right, well.
The crew banner that they put
yeah.
during the national anthem?
Yeah, I forgot about that.
I cried like a baby during that video.
That video?
They had this video. I to be honest with you, I don't even remember. I could not tell you a single image from that entire video, but I remember, yeah.
You were in the video?
Is that why you were crying? No, I was crying before that.
Okay.
But I had not even got slightly emotional the entire time. I have not gotten slightly emotional throughout this entire process. I'm not somebody who cries often. I'm definitely not like a happy crier, but I started like grinning uncontrollably, and then I was just like, okay, this is going to happen. It was just, it was a good way to end it. And then right after that, the game started pretty much, and it was just like, okay, now it's game time. Let's go.
That was a big thing too. Is I was standing next to another photographer, and we're on the field waiting for the players to come out. And you know, there's that thing of like journalistic integrity where you know you're not really supposed to show emotion. You're supposed to be dead. But you know,
this is why I'm not a journalist.
You kind of.
Crying in journalism?
There's no crying in journalism. Right. But, you know, for a second, I just kind of allowed myself to sit there and be in the moment. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think the song choice, I think it was Coldplay. I think it was like, I can't think of the name of the Coldplay. Was it Yellow?
Yeah. Well, that makes sense.
That's a great song choice, yeah. Especially for the message, the mix, the highlights that they chose. I looked over another one of the photographers, and they looked at me, and they were like, you're misty right now. And I was like, I'm not crying. I'm just chopping onions on the field right now. It's fine.
But they forgot to dust the stadium. It's so dusty in here.
They did so much cleaning, the dust got kicked up.
Two things. I'll speak loudly because I don't need a mic. The porta-potties. I heard a lot about the porta-potties.
Ah,
there were many of them.
There was
porta-potties out in the party lot. Okay.
Which is a lot more than what they had previously.
What was that before? One?
I think it was like two.
Two.
They would have two pretty much at each of the sections where they were going to put them. So there were maybe six or eight in the lot. Yeah. And they had five lined up in each of those spots this time. It was crazy. Nice. It was porta potties for days. More porta potties than anyone could ever need. It was. I never partake for the most part, but if you need it, it's there. So
yeah, it's just comforting to walk by and know that
it's the security,
there.
You know. Oh, yeah,
yeah. If you got to do your business, you can do your business.
And we should talk. Last year, it was a disgrace. They would clean those things like every half season. It was the most disgusting.
So
horrible.
It's like a construction.
You
site.
Couldn't even tailgate. You couldn't even tailgate. No, it
you
was
drive
horrible.
By those things on like the freeway where they're forever tearing apart the freeways, and you got that lone porta potty, and you always wonder about that. It's like,
yeah.
Well, if it came down to it. And I had to pull off to the side of the road. What would I find inside? And that's a question you never want answered. I have a feeling that's sort of what we were dealing with out
question,
there.
It was a question answered by many crew fans last season. And thankfully, we are in a new era now. And we're moving forward.
The sticker on the wall, the porta potty, had nothing written on it.
Yeah, it was like June.
1989, and that was it.
It was like June, and it would say it was last checked like March 12th or something like that. Yeah, it was pretty bad.
Person who retired from porta potties, you know, 15 years ago.
God bless Joe.
I got you. Well, you know, we joke, but that's important.
Yeah.
You know, your fans are your customers, and you're asking them to come down and spend their hard-earned dollar to enjoy the day with your team, and you'd better take care of them. And it's the little things, and they sound silly like porta potties, but it's important, and people feel like, well, you care. I'm going to come back because you do have people that. Came to their first game.
Mm-hmm.
You know, maybe their kids are just old enough to where you can take them out to a soccer game. When they're babies, you know, all the noise and everything, they're not necessarily gonna take to it. Yeah. But when they're three or four, that's when you start bringing them. So maybe it's their first time at a crew game and they had a positive experience. They're going to come back. They're going to tell their friends it's not that hard.
Yeah.
And they know it. I mean, they're in the business and they know it. And the level of professionalism is exciting to see and to hear about. And it sounds like everybody had a great experience. And if there were any complaints, I feel like that they would answer them. That they would go, oh, yeah, we hadn't thought of that. We'll look into that or whatever. Food, beverages, everything good. You found what you needed.
Yeah.
Okay.
Typical kind of stuff, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yes. Yes, Sam.
One more. Really, we got to give some big kudos to not just the crew staff, but the amount of Brown staff. That pulled off a 14-hour day to come help because
that's great.
It's still short-handed. There was Brown staffers everywhere.
That's great.
Oh, that's fantastic.
I just want to give them a shout-out because they were doing a great job.
Go Browns.
They were incredibly professional.
When is Baker Mayfield going to come down?
Yeah.
That's what I want to
know.
Yeah, I would love that.
That's a great point, too. You know, the big thing that happened for us was, what was it, Sam, about 20 minutes before kickoff or 30 minutes before kickoff, the door flies open, and it's Tim Bezbachenko.
Mm.
And
he has
just
a really surprised look on his face.
Yeah, and he was just like, oh, this is what this room is. And, you know, he came in, and then he just started having a conversation with us, like everything was cool, and asking how everything was, and actually cared about what we thought. And, you know, I can't think of any time ever that Andy Lochner ever walked in and was like, you know, how's the food? How's this? How's the outlets? They were so darn detailed. They were asking us how the Wi-Fi was to see if we could upload photos in a timely manner and stuff like that. Which that was never asked. As the big complaint was, how slow is the Wi-Fi? Can we fix it? And there was like one guy, I was like, yeah. Yeah, what you got here is the breakers broke. We can't really do anything about it till next week, and next week turned into like 3 months later. Right. But you know,
well, and this all this stuff, it speaks to a different philosophy from this ownership group from the last one, where, you know, with the last ownership group, we were constantly hearing about business metrics and about TV dollars and about attendance figures in this and that, and it was a very kind of business oriented.
What can you do for us as a fan?
Exactly. And everything that we have heard from Pete Edwards and from this ownership group is, we are stewards of this team. This is our community. This is, you know, we're here basically for you rather than you're here for us. Right. And so that is exactly the kind of attitude that I think is needed in this situation. I think they're going to be incredibly successful here. And I think that, you know, the sky's the limit as to where this team can go in the future.
Well, it sounds to me like to kind of put a point on this, that they're concentrating on the details first. And I think that is utmost importance. The big picture is a new stadium and so forth. But in the meantime, they're not, well, we're getting a new stadium in 2 years. We don't have to do anything with this. They're really trying to make the experience at Mapfre as great as it can be, and especially when the weather gets warmer and we're going to have more and more people out and we're going to see promotions executed and so forth. It's exciting that game one on March 2nd, without a lot of lead up, that they were able to pull this off in a way that gave everybody a great experience. Yep. So onward and upward. Now, there was a game played as well, and perhaps we won't be quite as complimentary as to how it turned out. There were some good things. There were some not so good things. But as it usually happens early in the season, you're going to find things to nitpick on that can be fixed with some time and some training. And with a new manager, that's going to happen. So after the break, we will break down the game as the Crew and New York Red Bulls draw in the opener on Saturday 1-1. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Massive Report. We are live at Hendox, and someone just put Soundgarden's My Wave on the jukebox. This is officially my bar now. That's how the only thing. Can you hear it? I can kind of hear it. Probably can't hear it on the podcast, however. I'm sorry.
I hope so.
I love Soundgarden.
Oh, yeah.
I love them, love them, love them. You know, you can find, if you want to spread the word, spread the gospel of the Massive Report, you tell your friends, you can find it on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, TuneIn, Spotify, these outlets you may have heard of for podcasts. I've been told that for now the second straight week I have not introduced myself. I don't know. That's just the way my brain works. But if I must, my name is Brian Phillips, and I work at CD125, and I am so proud and happy to be a part of the Massive Report, and I'm having a ball. And I thank you guys for having me.
We got a real radio guy. Finally.
Yeah, except I forget to introduce myself, which is like, yeah, you keep getting rid of them, do you? Well, I'll try to last for more than a few weeks, and we'll see how it goes. But so far, I think we're having a good time.
Absolutely.
You know, we were talking about game experience. There was one other thing that we should mention that we forgot before we get into an actual game review was the return. And I love how they sold it. They didn't get rid of one to bring back the other. It's like dad and son. It's Crew Cat and SC, the return of Crew Cat. And I saw that, and it made me feel warm inside. That is why they ever got rid of Crew Cat in the first place. I have no idea. A beloved figure in this community. I don't know if anyone saw Crew Cat around, but
absolutely.
He was at the Arnold. That's a true story.
That's great.
Oh, wow.
Did you see Crew Cat yourself at the Arnold?
Yeah. Well, I actually saw pictures. I can't say.
Okay.
Was he pumping iron or what?
He was with the Eagles, I think. Kicking the ball around with them.
I don't know if it's a suit or not, but Crew Cat's pretty jacked under that jersey.
Yeah.
I think he was rivaling the mountain in the deadlifting competition.
Yeah, that's why my daughter, Anna, who's an OSU education major, she will be a teacher here in about a year and a half. When she was four, her earliest memories are being terrified of Crewcat and hiding behind me. Whenever Crewcat, she would spend the entire game looking for Crewcat. Where's Crewcat, Daddy? Where's Crewcat? Crewcat is several sections over, sweetie. Don't worry about it. She was terrified of Crewcat. So, of course, I texted her and said, I want you to hear this from me first before you hear it from anyone else. The Crewcat is back. I hope you're going to be okay.
I have a thought about this, though. I'm sorry. I'm going to take us off the rails for a second. What is the scariest Columbus mascot that's out there right now? Because my vote's Stinger. I think to a kid, Stinger could be terrifying with the big eyeballs and sure.
It kind of looks like an alien.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I could see that. It's definitely not Crewcat. I couldn't ever figure out why she was. So I think it was just mascots in general. Yeah. But for me, it was clowns.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
Hiding, I remember hiding behind my mom at a parade. So it runs in my family. I mean, what are we going to do? We're neurotic Phillips people. We do the best we can do. All right. So we talked about the game day experience. And now an important part of the game day experience would be the match itself. As the Crew and New York Red Bulls draw 1-1. The Red Bulls brought out do you call it a JV team? What do we call it?
It was definitely a B squad.
Okay.
It was definitely a B
because
squad.
Because of their involvement in the CONCACAF Champions League. I know they have a match, I believe, tomorrow. So they placed a lot of importance on that. So Phillips wasn't playing and so forth. But those guys they put out there, they played their system, didn't they, Mike?
Yeah, I mean, well, you know, they also had, you know, Luis Robles, starting goalkeeper, who was goalkeeper of the year 2 years ago. Aaron Long, he's starter, you know, center back. He played the first half, then got a yellow, he got yanked, and they brought in their normal other center back and Tim Parker for the second half. So there are guys out there with ability, but here's the deal. I mean, they're really good at doing the plug and play. Hey, this is our system from top to bottom, whether it's the, you know, whether it's the team in Germany, whether it's the team in Austria, this is how Red Bull plays all across, right? And right down through the academy team and the reserve team and things like that. So they know what they're doing. And, you know, one of the articles we had in Massive Report was this is going to be the battle of the counter press versus the high press. And I really felt like the high press won. I mean, they really just made the Crew, A, befuddled and at times very predictable. You know, because there oftentimes the Crew were just sending a ball down the wing, having Santos or Miram run onto it, and the Red Bulls figured that out within about 20-25 minutes, and it became very difficult for the Crew to move the ball around. And if you noticed, whenever one of the outside backs or the wingers for the Crew had the ball, there would be four players swarming to that player on that side. So not only do you have him cut off by the sideline, now you have four guys around him where the field is. Where do they go with the ball? Right? It made it very difficult for the Crew to do what they needed to do. But there were the ups and downs. There were peaks and valleys. There were times where the Crew had the momentum. They had wave after wave. But to sustain that, it became very difficult. I'd be curious what your guys' thoughts were on the counter press versus the high press.
I mean, I thought it was a weird game. I thought that we had enough opportunities, goal-scoring opportunities, where we should have got the 3 points.
Sure.
There were a number of chances that were just a half second. The player was a half second too late to the cross, things like that, that should have been converted. And the goal that we gave up, I think that a well-running Crew team doesn't give up that goal. No. Waylon Francis, I don't know what the heck he was doing on that cross, but he just lost his man completely.
And it was a beautiful ball.
Yeah, it was.
Absolutely. It was. I mean, but it was not very well defended.
Yeah.
Well, we passed up a lot of shots in the first half, too.
Yeah.
Everyone was looking for that perfect pass that you tell kids about when you're coaching them. It's like, shoot the ball. Don't look for the perfect pass when you have an opening to shoot, because that perfect pass is never going to be there. And I felt like they fell into that trap where they were trying to make a good build-up perfect, and it just never happened.
Yeah.
Well, and also, you know, I mean, at the end of the first half, Robles had that beautiful save.
Oh, yeah.
Where he had to go full extension. Who shot that? Do you guys remember?
It was Harrison.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I mean, that was a beautiful save. I was right behind that goal, and I thought for sure that was going in, and Robles flew in like Superman and made that save. But, you know, I understand it's early, so there's going to be the ups and downs. Red Bull, they had played in some meaningful games prior, so they're kind of a little more in their groove. You know, one thing I would have liked to have seen, and again, I mentioned this before, before the show, that Caleb Porter has forgotten more about soccer than I'll ever know. So for me to question him is kind of silly. But from my vantage point, I really would have liked to have seen him pull the trigger on some substitutions. I don't think you necessarily make changes and make substitutions for the sake of it, But it really felt like from about 65, 70 minutes on, you could tell this wasn't going to work. It wasn't happening. Get something in there. I mean, they did bring Robinho in, but I just felt like they needed a little more of a bump up there. Would have loved to have seen what J.J. Williams could have done in a game like that because it was physical, and we talked last week about his size. Let's bring it in there and see what he can do with those guys. But unfortunately, that wasn't the case.
Yeah. Go ahead, Ralph.
I'm sorry. Mike, the big thing, too, I think probably drives you mad is, you know, Crew, I think, could be very successful generally if they have, you know, you follow your shot, essentially, is if you take the shot, kind of create a great chance. Robles is a little more prone to kind of spilling the ball out in front of the net. So usually if you get a back post runner, somebody that's going to be heading in and playing that second ball, that's going to be, you know, that's going to be gravy all day. You know, you can take it to the bank and at least generate better scoring opportunities than what we saw on Saturday.
Well, and especially against a B team. Mm-hmm. You know, a B team where the defenders outside of one guy are all backups. So take advantage of that.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's one of those live and learn kind of things, I guess. But, you know, I'm hoping that, you know, one of the things Porter mentioned in the post-game press conference, I don't know if we have that clip, is that he mentioned that he had kicked around the idea of bringing J.J. Williams in, but he didn't want to take out Zardes, which I understand. I felt like Zardes was playing pretty well. But he didn't want to take out Santos. I don't know about that one. I think we, you know, maybe move Zardes out to where Santos was, put JJ up at that top, you know, striker spot, and see what we can do. But, you know.
See, I don't think that Pedro had that bad of a game. He was not one of the main people. The only players that I was actually really disappointed in were Justin Merrim, who I thought had a poor game.
He did.
And Waylon Francis, who I think just has not adapted to the system yet and looked a little bit like he wasn't quite sure where he was supposed to be half the time.
Well, I think when it comes to Pedro Santos, I agree completely. Yeah. I think my main reasoning was I thought the first half he looked great. I mean, me and my friends, we looked at each other and were like, wow, he is playing really well because he wasn't going down. He was fighting. He was working. He was creating chances. He was running onto the ball, making things happen. The second half, it kind of dwindled down a little bit. So that's what I thought. Okay, let's just bring somebody in, something different. I'm not saying it was his fault or that, you know, he was like an Achilles heel, something of that. I just felt like, hey, if we're going to make a sub, we already took out Merrim. You're not going to take out Zardes. Santos was starting to hit the decline a little bit. Let's bring in JJ.
He was gassed towards the end of that game, and he is going to get dragged online for that miss that he had when he went to cross the ball and just... Ooh. I think his toe hit the turf. Yeah. That was right in front of Nordeca, and half the crowd was like, appreciative of the effort that he put in because he clearly had nothing left for the 10 minutes prior to that, but he still just like found the energy to get down that flank and to try to play that ball in. But you could see like his legs gave out at just the wrong time.
Yeah, I mean, look, that happens. I mean, I think he did wrongfully get some things online and from fans. Those things happen to the best players in the world sometimes, especially in that kind of stage. And you know, they're still in preseason form from a fitness standpoint, right? Yeah. And when you run like he did all day, That tends to happen.
And that's a great point because, you know, we were talking about Champions League, and I believe I heard the number was it was about 9 or 10 competitive matches that Red Bull had been part of. You know, the Pedro Santos that I saw in Charleston absolutely tearing up FC Cincinnati was a great form of, you know, Pedro Santos. But looking at FC Cincinnati, that's not a great litmus test right now, unfortunately.
Sure.
But, you know, I'm with you guys, too. I think, you know, I think collectively he had a great game. But, you know, what's going to stick in the minds of a lot of fans is that last 10, 15 minutes where he's gassed. And you guys know this, the mind goes when, you know, the body's tired. So it's just going to be a little bit of a difficult thing. And like you said, fitness will go. These guys are probably running at about 75%.
Right.
At least. But, again, maybe that's something we can touch on is Porter used one substitution throughout the whole game.
You know, so here's the thing. And maybe my memory's off. But this is something I remember when I lived in Portland, following the Timbers so closely. And I'd be curious when we get some stats for this, maybe next week. But I feel like Porter, in my mind, has always been late to make subs and made very few of them. And I don't know, with this team, maybe he just doesn't feel comfortable with the bench yet. But even, and again, my memory could be wrong. But I even feel like that was the case in Portland. Maybe one or two subs in a game, and they'd be late 75, 80, 85, 85th minute.
You're right on that because he had players like – I've watched a lot of Portland soccer between 2014 and about 2016 because it was on after Crew because, you know, you guys know it's like a drug. You got to get your fix a little bit. But he had Darren Maddox. He had Asprilla. And he would just get players that would just kill you with pace and go after the outside backs and put the other – you know, the opposing – defense under some extreme duress. I agree with you. I think it was that way, if memory recalls now that you say it that way. But, you know, he doesn't have his guys in there yet. You know, people can make the argument that J.J. Williams is one of his guys.
Sure.
Rubinho is a ex-Berhalter signing.
Right.
So, I mean, he hasn't had a full transfer window necessarily to make an impact that he would like on this team right now.
Absolutely. Well, Rubinho jumped out of the screen to me anyway.
Yes.
I loved his pace. I loved his energy. Perhaps he wasn't on the pitch long enough for us to get a real good feeling. But it was like in baseball when you bring in the closer.
Yep.
You know, and I felt like I really when he stepped onto the pitch and started running, I go, this could be the game winner right here. It didn't work out that way, but I foresee him as that guy.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Do you guys foresee him being in the starting 11? Is it too simple or too soon?
I think his first touch needs a little bit of tweaking.
Okay.
That's my only critique with him. A lot of his mental game is there, and you can see the ideas that he wants to execute. His first touch is just a little too heavy for MLS right now.
Okay.
I completely disagree. I think he's ready. I mean, I think if you really wanted to play him as a starter, you totally could do it right now. I think that he's in the same mold as, like, Artur, as one of these guys that you get young, and halfway through the season you're thinking, okay, there's a real player here, and then the next season you have to start swatting teams away with a baseball bat to try to keep him on your team because somebody's going to try to buy him. He has pace. I think he has good technical ability. I think he has a good brain. He knows what he wants to do, and he can do it. And I think he's so pacey that if you run him against tired legs, this was a B team, so those players were all fresh. But especially towards the end of the season when you start getting these really congested games, if he's only running on like 20 minutes and you know that you're against a team that's running on 90, he's going to destroy guys late in the game.
So I'm curious if you guys have any thoughts about Artur and Will Trapp together and how they were used in this game and how you see them fitting together in the future and how it might be different than we're used to. Did you pull any clues from the match at all?
You know, I thought Trapp looked a little, for lack of a better term, he just looked a little discombobulated. There was something off about his game, and I'm not sure what it was. He just didn't look like the guy expected to be out there in this game. And I'm going to watch a replay of the game so I can watch it on TV and kind of have a different vantage point from being in the stands. But being in the stands, that's how I felt. I'd be curious your guys' thoughts. But to me, it just didn't seem like he was on his game. I mean, if I had to grade him, I would have given him maybe a 5.5, a 6. Because I think he's capable of so much more. I also think that high press really was a thorn in the side of each and every player, especially from the back line and up, you know, the Artur's, the Trapps, Higuain. I thought Higuain was on fire. I mean, especially in the first half.
Not 34 years old, not running around like a 34-year-old.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it was – he, especially in that first half, I mean, he was just, you know, making runs, you know, quick one-touch passes, flicks, all that stuff. He was really keeping the offense going. I hope he can get some help in that regard because, again, he is 34. It's a long season. You know, can he do that the entire time? I just don't know. But anyway, going back to Trapp, I don't know. What did you guys think?
Well, they were closing him down really quick. And I think that was part of their strategy was close down Trapp and close down Higuain. And for Higuain, you saw them put 2-3 guys sprinting at Higuain as soon as he got the ball. And that's nothing for Higuain. He's technically able to play the ball around those guys and find the pass. I think Trapp struggled a little bit more with that. I think he would play a ball maybe a little bit too soon just to kind of get out from that pressure. But overall, I thought they did well. They did well enough that you saw Trapp dropping in as almost a center back and Gaston Sauro pushing up into the 18-yard box like he was in preseason. I think that's going to be a thing this season, and I love it. Every time he goes on a run, I'm like, yeah, Gaston, go, buddy, go.
Well, Trapp has always been comfortable with dropping back and filling for whoever needs to be filled.
Yeah.
But his playmaking ability, we've seen enough of it to know that we want to see more.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And so if he can figure out how to be almost like the where Higuain is the short passing game, Trapp can be – because he can find those quick – long balls into the attacking third. He sees the field that way. Yeah. And I just think there's been so much turmoil and so much change that it's not surprising you would see anyone maybe struggle a little bit and try to figure out what their role is, what the coach wants, and so forth.
You know, I think with Trapp, I mean, like you mentioned, he was dropping back quite a bit and filling in that role, and he did that a lot with Berhalter. A lot of the times when Trapp would get the ball last year with Berhalter, he would have a decent amount of space, you know, because he was dropping so far back, right? This year, I think we're seeing him push up a little more, and then when you tie in the fact that Red Bull does play that high press, it's one of those things, yes, he's ready for it. I'm sure it's not like it's news to him. But to actually execute it on the field on game day can be a whole other thing. And again, every player for the Crew that had the ball, it seemed like there was 3-4 players for the Red Bulls there within a second. Yeah. And you know, maybe he just needs to get his speed of play up a little bit from the preseason to an MLS game, right?
Yeah, and I mean, that's something that I was kind of wondering too. And if you look at the way that Porter plays ball compared to Berhalter, is it's a lot of quicker passes at the back, where Trapp was more of the swing man, if you will. He would take it to the right. He'd be your point of switching, essentially. The fact that he's asked to, you know, do quicker passes now at the back, I think kind of stresses him out a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And he has the tendency of not getting his leg fully behind the ball, so that'll lead to turnovers. That'll lead him to get frustrated, you know, lead to weird yellow cards like we saw. You know, I don't know, maybe you guys had a better vantage point than I did. The challenge looked late.
It was. It was. I think he was just a little frustrated.
Yeah. I mean, the challenge looked late. I've heard people tell me that it was, you know, a phantom yellow card or something like that. But I firmly believe it was a late challenge. But, you know, he's going to get frustrated in that instance. And like we said, guys, it's you know, you're lucky to get 1 point at the start of the year. You know, there are teams out there that got throttled, you know, and don't have, you know, a point to speak of at the start of the 2019 season. And, you know, he's only going to grow. He's only going to get better. He's got great experienced players like Ricardo Clark to learn from in this position. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it helps that he's with his college coach again. You know, so that, you know, Porter obviously saw something and knew something that could reach him. And if he's going through, you know, I'm not saying he's going through a difficult time, but if he happens to, you know, go through a slump, Porter's likely going to be the best person to get him out of that.
Yeah, sure. It's a growing pain. You know, one thing you say about Porter, in 6 seasons as an MLS head coach, 2-0-4. So he's never lost an opener, ever, which is cool. I mean, that means he has his teams at least ready to grind out a draw, which is certainly better than kicking off any season with a loss.
Well, I think it's good to get a game out of the way against a conference rival and one that knows you probably better than any other club. You're not going to bring many surprises as far as players go. So to get the point out of it, I think it's fine. Let's hand out grades, and then we'll do man of the match. I don't know how you guys want to do grades. Do you want to – how should we do this, Sam? How should we hand out grades? Just
yell a name and give them some numbers.
How about
lightning round?
Lightning round, yeah.
All right, no words, just numbers. Is that what we're doing? Let's do it.
All right, we can do that.
All right, take the helm then. How do you want to do this?
Are we doing like on a 10 scale or like an
yeah.
ABS?
Oh, okay. Like okay. All right. All right. Okay. Well, I almost feel like Zach didn't have a whole lot to do. So, Zach Steffen?
7.
5.5.
I'll say 6.5.
Okay.
5.5.
Gaston?
8.
Yeah, I can go with that.
6.
Why is that?
Hold on.
Hold on. Can, so can,
get out of here with that.
Can we just ask what that's about? I'm curious.
I mean, you know, so my grade scale is I think 5.5 is average. Mm. I think 6, you know, now you guys are all looking at me very intently.
It's because your rating sucks, dude. That's why.
This was better when I was at home and I can hide behind my computer. But, you know, I think he was good, but I just he didn't overly wow me. But, you know, it's, you know, I don't know.
What do you want to see from him that you didn't see?
Even Sam's shaking his head.
I got myself into this rabbit hole, so I have
you
to dig
sure
myself
did.
Out.
You are
now.
In a pickle, sir.
Would you like to revise that statement,
sir? You
know
what? Next week I'm going to have a mic just so I can respond to you.
Okay. But, you know, I just, you know, I might have rated him higher if they got the win. Maybe I would have given him a 7 or
he's
something like that.
He's a defender.
He's a defender.
Can I speak on behalf of the eight squad here? So I thought that he was not at fault for the one goal that we conceded. That was a counterattack.
I would give him a 7. I know it's team of the week, but I would give him a 7
But they got the goal scored, so that deducts one.
Yeah, but he really also he scored a flick on header that he somehow like hit backwards off the top of his head
and deflected off somebody's face.
It was everything he did was cool, and he's also doing this like Franco Baresi libero style center back where he's just like, I'm going to be a midfielder for 5 seconds here. And I love that.
I'm
so
going
he gets
to
a
be a midfielder.
He gets a bonus point for that. And he also gets a bonus point for having the coolest Instagram in crew history.
Best hair. Check that out.
Yeah. Right. Right, oh, if you're not following him on Instagram, you got
to
do it.
I want to
do
a piece about that. But
all right, can we bump him up a half a point for his Instagram? Ralph?
We'll go 7.
Yes. All right, 7. We got Ralph up to a 7.
This is better.
We got him.
All right, the returned Waylon. Waylon France.
Oof, that was a rough one, man. I mean, you're talking 5.5 is the average. I'm going to go 5. I mean... He just wait, we're just doing the numbers, right? We're not getting into everybody. Just numbers.
Just
5.
Do what you have to do.
All right, we'll go 5.
I'm going to also do 5. Sorry, Waylon.
Yeah, I'll do 5. I'll stay with the 5.
Harrison?
6.
5.5.
You guys are rough.
I'll go 5.5.
Okay.
Yeah.
What should he have done that he didn't do?
I just connected more passes, I think, in the final third.
Okay.
I felt like... both outside backs were thoroughly smothered and unable to create the type of chances that we know they're capable of. Though I will say Harrison did have that shot.
No.
That, he also had a similar one that he should have scored on.
Right. Yeah, so there's that. But overall, I just felt like there were too many valleys in the peaks and valleys of the game. You understand? So. Mm-hmm.
They were overlapping less than they did under Berhalter, and that may be a system thing. So I may be kind of handicapping their scores a little bit and you know, hurting their scores when really I should be helping them. But, yeah, I was expecting those forward runs, and I thought that if they were trying those, they were ineffective.
Who am I missing in the back? Mensah?
Mensah.
Yeah, yeah. I don't really have any thoughts on him either way, which I guess is good for
really
the position he plays in the field, right?
Yeah, it's kind of like your offensive line sometimes in football. If you don't notice him, that's a good thing, I think that's a good thing for him.
Six point five. He won all the challenges that he needed to win, and when it was kind of a 50-50 ball, those deep balls where he has to jump up and head it clear above the other guy, he always wins those. So.
Yeah,
six I'm giving him a 6 for his effort in the preseason too.
All right. Artur! I like saying it like that.
Just numbers.
You know, okay. I'm going to go 5.5.
6.5.
5.5.
Okay. Will Trapp?
Oof.
Broke him down.
Buddy. 5.
I'm with Ralph there.
6.
Miram.
Oof.
4.75.
Yeah, I was going to go 4.5. It was rough. 4.5.
5.5.
Okay.
I was more generous, I feel like. I think Ralph and I are a little mean. when it comes
guys are
that.
In a mood today. Somebody's got a case of the Mondays. That great movie just turned 20, by the way, Office Space.
Really?
You guys?
Oh, it's just an amazing movie.
Oh, man.
Oh, so great.
And, hey, we have our own version of the Patricks, too.
Yeah?
The Bobs.
The Bobs, yeah.
We have the Patricks.
That's awesome.
Bobs slide
down. I'm going to save Higuain. Zardes.
I'm going to go 7.5.
Yeah?
6.5.
I'll go 7.
Higuain.
He was a monster. I'm going to go an 8.
7.
7-7.
What's the final score of the game if for some reason Higuain can't play?
Oof.
Oh. No. 2-0?
Yeah.
New York?
Yeah. I mean, he's that important, right?
Hey, nobody got the prediction right because we all had the crew winning, didn't we? Gosh.
Yeah, no one called a draw. No one. Does anyone want to predict a draw? No one wants to predict a draw.
Toto's Africa is currently playing in Hendox right now.
This is Titanic.
I thought I heard
Ralph.
Elliot and I looked at each other like, wait.
It's because it's Titanic is playing
here. All right, okay. we're giving Ralph a 4.
Right. Hey, the match isn't over. I can still redeem myself.
3.5.
Let's not forget.
3.25.
Robinho.
I mean, he came. Oh, sorry. Just numbers. 6.5. Damn it.
Robinho is the truth. I'm giving him an 8.
Ooh.
No, I'm just kidding. I'm giving him a 7.
An 8?
I was joking. It's a 7. I want to give him an 8.
The shock value was just.
He's my dude. Robinho is the truth.
Today, Ralph.
6.5, I would say.
I'm still in shock. I'm shook from the Toto the Toto false alarm there. I'm sorry.
A Toto false alarm. It gets us all from time to time. It's okay. Let's grade the coach, Caleb Porter.
Wait. Are we going to do Pedro?
Yeah. Oh, I knew I forgot somebody. Santos.
5.5.
I wish I could grade a first half and then a second half, right? But when,
do it.
Okay.
Do
it. All right, first half, I'm going to give him a solid 7.
I'd grade.
All right, and the second half, I'm going to give him a 5.
I like the effort, so I'm going to give him a 6.
I'm glad I didn't have you guys in high school. I never graduated. All right, Caleb Porter.
Oh God, as much as I hate to say it because I love Caleb Porter as a coach. He's one of the coaches I look up to. I'm going to have to say 5.5.
Man. I can't get on board with that. It's his first game. I'm going to give him a 7 based on the fact that it's his first game.
5.5, K.
Fair enough. Many games ahead. And I feel like you could give everyone an incomplete grade because it was the first game. And
I agree.
Have 30-some-odd matches left. And hopefully the playoffs as well. And we'll look ahead not to all of them, but only to next week's against, let's head down to Florida to a little strip mall.
Yeah!
And let's talk about the New England Revolution, who I don't know how many of the players know who their owner is. Guessing from the neglect, probably not many of them do know who signs their paycheck. And now that's probably a good thing. We'll be back in just a moment to look ahead to Saturday's match in Foxborough against the Revs. That's coming up next on the Massive Report. Welcome back to the Massive Report brought to you by GCG Bags. Is that Celine Dion I'm hearing in the back? No, I can't. I've been wearing headphones too many years. I can't hear anything at this point. Before we look ahead to the New England Revolution, there were other games played this weekend. I know we don't really care about these other teams, but at some point it does have an effect on what happens to Columbus Crew SC. So I'll just read the scores. If you saw anything, you have a thought on it, jump in, fellas. I just ran to my parking meter. I got to get in shape. This is terrible. This is terrible. I'm still out of breath. Our friends Toronto FC 3 and Philadelphia Union 1. I thought there were high hopes for the Union this year. And
I mean, isn't that the case every year?
Yeah.
There are never high hopes
that
for the Philadelphia
wet.
Union.
Don't they play in a toxic waste dump or something? I mean,
more
it's
or less.
Yeah.
No, that's Austin.
Ah.
No. They don't play. They don't play.
They will be.
Oh, no.
Potentially.
Supposedly. Orlando City and NYCFC 2-2 draw. Anybody see that? No?
No.
Two teams with major issues.
What are their issues?
Orlando City are just bad all the time, and their fans are mad about it. And then NYCFC had some bad press this week involving neo-Nazis in their stadium. Which has been an ongoing problem for them for the past.
This has been an ongoing problem.
Yes.
Nazis showing up at the games. Why can't they put a stop to this?
They can. They've decided not to do it because they're not being Nazis in the stadium necessarily.
What are you doing as a professional organization where you were actively attracting Nazis?
I should have. Yeah, I probably.
That's funny, actually.
I don't know. I don't really know what the scoop is with that, but yeah, they've got like a neo-Nazi group that hangs around supposedly.
I see.
And they're just kind of still hanging around, still, you know, staying out of trouble, I guess.
Alex, this week your assignment is to look into the Nazis that follow NYCFC, and I want a full report next week.
And embedded.
Alex, I want you to embed yourself with fascists.
I already
who follow NYCFC. Will you do that for me?
I already said I'm not a journalist. That's Ralph. We gotta send Ralph. We'll send Ralph undercover.
We'll send one of the new writers. That's not my thing.
Let's try to segue away from that somehow. In a blizzard, Rapids and Timbers 3-3 draw.
That game was hilarious to watch. If you guys didn't watch, at least watch the highlights or the condensed version. On the MLS app, it's hilarious. 3-3, playing on the weirdest looking snow I've ever seen, because it was soft, but you know, generally with soft snow, the ball will kind of like stop a little bit and or leave trails.
It
as
was
it's
moving
going.
Quickly.
Yeah, it was like they were playing on ice. It was bizarre. It was really weird. And so they had the orange ball out, which is always fun.
Yep.
And it ended up being 3-3 and a fun. A fun little show there in Colorado. Nobody was at the game, though. Nobody ever goes to the games out there, trust me.
Well, I wouldn't want to sit out in that, I don't
think. I mean, it could be 80 and beautiful out. Nobody goes to those games. Huh. Nobody cares.
I thought they were doing well.
No.
Fair enough. Well, you used to live there, so I'm going to defer to you. Speaking of not going to games, Houston Dynamo home to Real Salt Lake. A 1-1 draw there.
I got nothing.
You got nothing? Nobody wants to watch that game.
Don't care.
All right.
I do like Mike Petke a lot. Does that mean anything for Salt Lake?
I do. No? He's a good.
Oh, Raimondo's retiring.
Oh, yeah. That's
Nick
Raimondo's
hanging it up. Yeah.
20 years.
Yeah.
There's the ref for the center official.
Oh, yeah. It looks like the Shining.
Shining.
Yeah. Where
is
Jack Nicholson
is that real?
Is it in
that's real.
Where he freezes to death outside of the outside of the resort. Yeah. That's
unreal.
What it looks like. Yeah. You got it.
Couldn't pay me.
Hazard pay for that referee.
Yeah.
The Loons, Minnesota United 3, and the Whitecaps 2. Anybody?
Hey, good for Adrian Heath.
That was their first road, I believe that was their first like road win.
Ever?
I think so.
Wow.
Really?
Jeez. I think so.
Hey, look at that. Good for Adrian Heath. I like him. He's a fun, fiery guy as coach. I like him.
I didn't watch this game, but so I have to look up to see if Ethan Finley played. Because if Ethan Finley played, then I kind of care.
He's back.
Did he play, though?
I'm not too certain.
I miss Ethan.
I have many things going on. I can't watch all of this.
All right, we'll circle back in case you find out if Ethan Finley played or not. LA Galaxy 2 and Chicago Fire 1.
That was fun.
Yeah?
That was a great game. It was on Fox Sports. It came on pretty much right after the Kruger game, shortly thereafter. Chicago's winning 1-0, controlling most of the game. LA just pulls out a couple. Ibrahimovic, of course, scores the game winner.
That's 16-year-old.
Yeah, Alvarez got a beautiful left-footed chip right into the box, heads it in. Oh, my God. That was a fun one.
Do Galaxy fans have hope that they're going to crawl out of the cellar?
I think so. They always do, right? But I think with, you know, Ibra being there, them getting that Dos Santos thing taken care of finally, and I do think Alvarez is going to be – he's going to be in the starting 11 for them soon. A 16-year-old who can actually play.
That's crazy.
Pretty nuts.
That's crazy. Montreal Impact 2 and San Jose Earthquakes 1.
Nothing.
Nothing.
Ignacio Piatti is so good.
He is
still
good.
He is. I think he could play until he's 50 years old if he really wanted
he's
to.
He's like Higuain,
so
too.
Good. Yeah,
I don't know what's in the water in Argentina right now.
Did he say this is his last year in Montreal or no?
I don't
Not
think
that
so.
I'm aware of.
Okay.
That's been going around for a while.
Okay.
One that interested me greatly outside of the Crew game would be Sounders 4 and the inaugural FC Cincinnati. That goal
it started off nice.
The first Cincinnati goal from let's say I can't read my notes here. Bertone,
yeah.
That great full volley, Bertone, and you know you weren't crazy enough to think that wow they're gonna win this game on the road 4-0 or something. But it was something to hang their hat on. Their supporters that they showed on TV were having a great time. But after that, it was downhill from there.
Downhill.
Jordan Morris.
Looking like a boss.
Yeah.
Back from a torn ACL.
Yeah, coming back from a serious knee injury. And for the U.S. men, that is a good sign to see him playing well. And I just lost my list of scores.
That goal, though, that's got to be goal of the week automatically, right? Nothing else came close to that from what I saw.
I don't think so.
I think it was goal of the week.
I think Darwin Quintero is up there, too.
But I really enjoyed that game. I enjoyed watching Cincinnati Twitter because I have met a lot of Cincinnati fans, and then there are a handful of people that I follow on Twitter that used to be Crew fans that are now Cincinnati fans.
Oh, really?
And seeing them go from absolute joy of getting this amazing goal and going up 1-0 to 1-1 and seeing them be like, oh, no, it's fine. We're going to pull this out to 2-1. And it's like, we can still do something. And then 3-1. And it's like, maybe we can still get a draw. And then 4-1, we're just the despair set in. Watching that happen in real time was a beautiful thing, and I wish nothing but the worst for FC Cincinnati. I hope they lose every game.
Do you think that goal, they got a little ahead of themselves? They're like, championship, like you remember TJ Houshmandzadeh? Remember that old fantasy football thing where they're like, you draft him, championship? Do you think when they scored that goal, like, oh, this is our year, guys, we're gonna make it happen?
Yeah.
And then slowly right down the
teams. They really remind me of Orlando City fans when Orlando City first came to the league, because Orlando City fans had been soccer fans for about 15 minutes prior to getting a team. And I feel like that's pretty much what happened in Cincinnati, too, is like They dropped like a second division team there. They were super successful right away. The MLS talk started 15 minutes after their first game, and everybody was like, "Oh, look, they can put 50,000 people at $1 a ticket in their stadium. Maybe we should give them a franchise." And it's just kind of continued from there. But you know, all the $2.94 tickets in the world cannot buy you a championship in Major League Soccer, and so they have to put a real team together now. And I don't think they're going to do it for a while, at least. This season is going to be miserable for them, I hope. And I am here for it.
What?
Oh,
40 draft.
That's right.
Yeah, they had those, I think it was nine, right?
All of the union's draft picks.
Yeah, all those third round super draft picks are not coming through for them. I don't know why they thought that wouldn't pan out. Who knows?
Here's the thing. So, one of their big signings was Fernando Adi, right? Former Timber, right? So he was on the MLS Cup Championship Timbers, right? So he knows what it's like to have a good team around him. Did you guys see that little article about a week ago where he's like, "I don't think we're going to be very good this year"? I mean, he didn't say that, but he said it. You understand? And that, to me, was a big eye-opener. And then when you look at that roster, you go, there's a whole right side of the team. There's no right side on this team. There's a big hole over there.
Yeah, they've got a good back line, with Waston and Haglin. But outside of that, their holding midfield's very, very weak. Hoyt's not great. Hoyt was getting torched down in Charleston. But, yeah, that whole right side, outside of the, 7 players that they got in the expansion draft, 7 or 8 players, I can't name the USL guys. I have no idea who. Except Corbin Bone. That's it. That's the only one I know. But
and even he's an MLS washout.
Yeah, I mean, but I told a few, a few fans this is that I don't think Alan Koch makes it through the midpoint of the season, and I think that they switch out their goalkeeper because I think they got to give Spencer Ritchie a go because their goalkeeper is very long, but not very athletic. Feels very uncoordinated.
All right, I will disagree with that.
That's
fine. I think the management in Cincinnati, and I don't want to turn this into the Cincinnati show. Who cares, right? But I do think they like him a lot, and I think
Alan Koch is
good. But I can't imagine they'll get rid of him because they see the roster that I mean, Jesus Christ himself couldn't pull an MLS Cup championship out of that team. All right. I mean, they're terrible.
He's not a soccer coach.
Well, if it was L.A. Cincinnati FC, if somehow they played in Los Angeles, even though we're in Cincinnati, then Jesus would be a designated player.
That's true.
Because MLS would make that happen, wouldn't true. They?
Jesus, definitely.
Absolutely.
Yeah. But a Jesus, tilde.
Ladies and gentlemen, Jesus.
Checking into the match. Yeah.
The all marketing right, opportunities for the Christian community would be tremendous.
That's true. That's a good point.
I guess to put a period on that, hell is real.
There we go. And we've come full circle.
Cincinnati. All right, there were two games on Sunday. DC United over the champion Atlanta United, 2-0.
That was a good game.
Who would have thought the one team to not score all weekend would be Atlanta?
Yeah. I think
unreal.
Bold prediction for the year. I think Joseph Martinez is going to miss Almiron a lot because you can see that kid depart from Atlanta, and he's thriving in the Premier League with Newcastle
already now. Yeah.
And I just think Martinez is going to be, just kind of by himself, kind of hanging outside the party. It's, raining, and he's just kind of looking inside, like just holding the window, looking at Miggy, and just like, "Hey, you got any room for me in
absolutely.
There?"
Absolutely. Well, they spent a lot of money on him. They better hope it works out for Pity.
Yeah, Pity Martinez. I forgot about that. Yeah, I mean, he still has yet to come around, too, but... and then Martinez, I think, was a 5-year contract extension, too, if I'm not mistaken.
They're just saving all of their goals for FC Cincinnati. I mean, the Sounders game was just the appetizer. The main course is going to be next week when they play
Atlanta.
They're
going to hang 7 on them.
Yeah. What? Who did Cincinnati piss off in the league for scheduling to go at Seattle and then against Atlanta?
Back-to-back
opening games for FC
Cincinnati.
Well,
UC has spring practice or something. That's probably the stadium's in use, right?
They're just going to have to throw free tickets out of helicopters to get people to see that pathetic game. They're going to have to go below the $2.94.
They got Portland after that then.
Wow.
They're going to have to go like $2.75 maybe, undercut last year's tickets a little bit.
Stan, I have a question for you.
Yeah.
Are you saying you don't like FC Cincinnati? I'm trying to piece this together.
They're just, to me, it's like,
I think they have to be worth not liking, right?
I think it's...
There's just it's, not... It's sort of like, eh,
yeah,
okay.
Yeah, I don't really care yet.
I mean, it depends on what you define like. I like them in the same way that I like Orlando. They amuse me.
Okay.
They are a source of constant entertainment. Their failure is my happiness. okay, so, I mean...
All
you
of
can.
The hate
I get it.
It's not. It's not.
Dude, you're
hate implies. Hate implies. Yeah, it implies anger, right? There's no anger. It's just like, oh, you guys are doing it again. Oh, you didn't
you're
learn.
You're bemused.
Yes. Rip your inbox, yes. Dude.
Yeah. All right, finally, real quick, because we got to get to New England. LAFC 2 and Sporting Kansas City 1.
That was a game. Did you guys watch that? Anybody watch that?
I did not
watch that one.
So LAFC scored in the 85th. 88, I don't know, it was late in the game to put it away. And that was a fun one. That was a fun. The crowd, I'll tell you what, LAFC's crowd, they're fun. They are loud. They're boisterous throughout the entire game. And they pulled it out. It was actually a great substitution made by Bob Bradley. They brought in a sub. Diamande came in for Christian Ramirez right off the bench. Boom, scores. That's the game. It was beautiful.
Fair enough. Well, that's the rundown from weekend number one in the MLS. Crew go to Foxborough. I can't imagine a more dreary place at 2 p.m. in March on a Saturday afternoon than an empty Gillette Stadium in Foxborough, Massachusetts, yeah, for the long-neglected New England Revolution. I got to be honest with you. I just, like, I need to dig into their roster. I forget who's playing for them and everything. Well, what do they have?
Well, it's pretty much just Brad Friedel and a bunch of bums on the field, right? So, you know, they got rid of Kellen Rowe. They don't have Lee Wynn anymore. He's been gone for about a year now. But, yeah, there's not a lot on that roster, quite frankly. I can't – they have Juan Agudelo. They have Brad Knighton in goal, right? There's not a whole lot going on there. The
Kai
crew
–
pardon me?
Kai Kamara's gone.
Oh, well, yeah, he's on, like, his 10th team.
Yeah.
Kai Kamara's like the Jim Jackson of MLS. He's been on every team. But, yeah, there's not a whole lot. And I don't know, there's – I was kind of skeptical of the Friedel hire to begin with the Revolution, and it wasn't a great season last year, and I don't know that this season is going to be much better.
It's amazing to me, for all the success in the New England Patriots, and you have the same owner, and I know he's distracted.
Yeah, we talked about
that. Distracted more
earlier
than we thought. Ooh. But for this team to just feel like it's like a total afterthought every season. And well, they're one of the original franchises.
One of my favorite tweets during the Super Bowl was, so you know, that was Stan Kroenke, who owns the Rapids, Robert Kraft, who owns the Revolution, right? So it was Rams, Patriots, right? There's a tweet from Nutmeg News that said, the loser of the Super Bowl has to start caring about their MLS team.
All right. Well, I think that kind of puts a bow on it pretty nicely. Let's go around and predict some scores here for Saturday afternoon at New England.
All right. I am not a homer, okay, but the crew are going to win. I'm going to go 2-1 crew.
2-0.
Ralph?
I'm looking at this team, New England being, and they've got a lot of young talent, you know, with Teal Bunbury. Christian Pena. Who?
Is Diego Fagundes still around, or he finally leave?
I think he's still there.
Okay.
But Christian Pena's, I believe, Colombian, maybe? We'll go with Colombian, sure. Lean into it. He's a very good winger, and just kind of, you know, it'll be interesting to see Caleb Porter style against another coaching style with Brad Friedel, who kind of tends to play a very balanced style of attack. I'm kind of interested to see how Waylon Francis and Harrison Offal attack the wingers there, too. It looks like it's a 4-4-2 is what New England ran last week. But, yeah, I mean, Knighton's never really wowed me in goal. He's very pedestrian. I'm kind of surprised that Friedel let Matt Turner go, because I thought Matt Turner was a very good goalkeeper for them and somebody that they could build on. You know, this is going to be, I think, a floodgates kind of game. I think this will be a 2-1 victory for the crew.
I'm going 3-0.
Oh, I love that.
I like
3-0.
It.
Yeah, I think this is a team that will look back at Red Bulls and go, we left too many goals on the field. We left too many opportunities. We didn't shoot enough. We didn't take the opportunities that were afforded us, and going to come out and let that frustration out and win the game 3-0. That's what I'm saying.
I'm down for it. Hey, how about this? Is this when we see the debut of J.J. Williams?
I would like that.
I would love it.
Yeah. Maybe.
We'll see.
Hey, Africa's playing again.
How many times did you put it in the jukebox, Ralph?
Twice.
Yeah, right on.
One's the Weezer, one's the Toto.
Gotcha. All right. Well, I guess we're done. Are we done, Sam?
Are we done?
We're done. Now, we don't have a pair of tickets to give away this week, but we do need to congratulate our winner from last week. Jim Croxton got to take in the opener, courtesy of the Massive Report. Now, just kind of a teaser for next week, we have a home game to preview. And somewhere during the podcast, there's going to be information you're going to need to win those tickets. So be listening next week. But, you know, listen every week. And tell your friends.
Tell your friends' friends.
Tell your friends' friends. I'm Brian Phillips from CD1025, Alex, Mike, Ralph. Thank you. And Sam, of course, thank you so much for being here and listening to The Massive Report. Brought to you by 180 Property Development. The Massive Report podcast couldn't be possible without them. 180 Property Development is your partner in redeveloping, remodeling, or even building your home from the ground up. Skilled builders and designers are ready to help you build the home of your dreams. Check out 180propertydevelopment.com for your next projects. And we will see you next week right back here at Hendox for another edition of The Massive Report.